Well, so I know we've been talking about the walks for a while now, but why do you think that it's still such a prominent issue?
We continue to dig in deep and see what's going on here, because obviously when we struggle early in the year, that was one of the main issues, the free passes, too many non-competitive pitches. And today was not a good day. We saw it from the beginning. Quintana struggled, how to work out of trouble in the first inning, the third inning, they finally got him in the fourth. And then everyone that came after, it seems like he gave a free pass. So, like I said, we got to continue to look and see what we got here, because, a lot of non-competitive pitches, ball out of hand, a lot of deep counts, and big league teams are going to make you pay. It's hard to win a baseball game when, we gave up, what, 11, 12 walks, a hit by pitch. So that's hard to do. Yeah, we gotta go back and make some adjustments quickly here. So we need to stop that.
That aren't contending. How disappointing of an outcome is just the week generally?
Yeah, you obviously want to win every series you can. We won this series. Today might leave a little bit of a bad taste in our mouth, but we still got a long way to go. You can't dwell on something like this. You got to get ready. You got a really good team coming in here for the next three games, and you gotta be able to bounce back tomorrow and fight.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, August the 18th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to welcome the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Well, welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. A lot to talk about today. Mets with a disappointing week against second division clubs. Brutal loss today. Brutal loss on a business person special against the A's. Why? We'll get into that. Jeff McNeil, controversy with the at-bat in the ninth inning. He's had a very interesting second half. I've dived into that. We'll talk about that. And the league getting involved again. They want to legislate starting pitching. They've already legislated pickoffs and steals and relievers. So why not get involved again? The league is like the government. They get involved in our lives and make things worse. But anyway, we'll talk about that. And of course, I'm sure as we go along, some of the wild stuff will come up. I'll start off by saying this, a couple of things about today's ballgame. Number one, love the noon start. I know the game went long, especially late, but isn't it nice? They start at noon, the ball game. I know you got to get up and maybe you got some things to do in the morning on a Sunday, but the game starts at noon. It's over by about 3 o'clock. You got the whole Sunday ahead of you. These 140s, it used to be you start at 1 o'clock on a Sunday, and that was when you had 3 hour and so, half 3:30 games. So of course, game's not over till about 4:30, 5 o'clock. Here, games are now 2.5 hours about. Game starts at 1:40. You pretty much put it back to where it is because you add another hour to it. And yeah, you still have a lot of Sunday left, but I feel like you start a game at noon. Wouldn't it be cool? Start the games early on a Sunday. Get them on. Get them over with. You got your whole Sunday ahead of you. And you could enjoy maybe even talking baseball. Who knows? So, and then I know everybody gets crazy, and I do too, because you can't, especially with the NBA, with the playoffs, like you can't find games. And the Roku situation, I know when I first saw it, it annoyed me. And I'm like, here I go. I can't watch the game because I don't have a Roku subscription. Well, anyway, it was free. It was very easy to get on the Roku. I was basically 5 minutes it took me to sign up. I know, again, data privacy, another app. I get it. On a smart TV, it's not the end of the world. And because it was free, I see the promotion. I see why Roku did it. Because now a guy like me who was not thinking about Roku, now says, you know what, maybe I'll check the Roku out and see what kind of movies are on for free or shows, and I'm not looking to add another subscription service for pay, but the promotion worked, and it was really easy. I know that people get crazy with Wrecker. He doesn't really bother me. You had the Marlins broadcaster there, I believe. The broadcast wasn't that bad. Look, the in-game stuff, all that stuff they try to do to bring you down on a field, I hate it. In-game interviews, if you want to do stuff like they did with Iglesias and interviewing him during the game, and you want to put cool angles and get the audio down there to understand or get deeper into the game down on the field, I get it. I'm okay with it. Love in the huddle situations of what they show you during an NBA game or during another sport. You really don't have that. I don't think that baseball ever allow you to put a mic in the dugout and hear a pitcher and their coach, or even Mendoza talking strategy with his bench coach, with John Gibbs. Not going to do that. But if you could get down on the field with camera angles and maybe getting a feel of the game on that micro level, like you were actually playing the game, I don't have a problem with that. The interviews, they're just an annoyance to the players, and they're an annoyance, quite honestly, to the fans, especially, like, I hate them during NBA playoff games. Like, here, it's the fourth quarter, tight game. What is Thibodeau going to say? What is Nick Nurse going to say? You know, what is Rick Carlisle going to say? And even with baseball, like, hey, Carlos Mendoza, it's tie game. What do you guys need to do? Well, we need to score one more run to the opposition, right? That's the way it works. So I didn't hate the Roku situation. I like the early start. I know that they also do those, what, 11 o'clock games or 11:30 games. The Mets did that when they were in London. That was because of the time change. Early Sunday games, thumbs up, all for it. That's the Talking Mets, Mike Silva, seal of approval. Now to the meat and potatoes here. And we have a lot to talk about, as I said in the opening. Unfortunately, and I think we, in this season, was one of those weird situations where even though we knew what the Mets were as they went through that weird getting to know you phase where they swung one way or the other, I think we all had a feeling, even as they got hot and they played better than anybody in baseball for about 2 months, that this probably was a mid-80s win team that maybe with some reinforcements at the deadline and with some top-level performance from their veteran players could possibly push themselves into the conversation for 90 wins, which at some point a couple of weeks ago, right around the trade deadline or right before, I think that was very realistic. The more that we watch this club, and after this very disappointing week against second-division clubs, and look, the Marlins are plucky, we knew that, and the A's, I didn't realize that they've been pretty good since the middle of July. Give them credit in the face of all the, you know, not having a home, and what are they going to Vegas in a couple of years, and all the lack of investment. They actually have some good players, and we'll see where that goes. I mean, these two clubs are very similar, one on the West Coast, one on the East Coast, well, Southeast, where they just have ownership groups that just don't invest. And no matter what smart people you have, Billy Beane on one coast and now Peter Bendix on the other coast, I don't know with that kind of, well, lack thereof investment that those teams could ever get out of their own way. So it's pretty much going to be Groundhog Day. We'll see when the A's go to Vegas. I was in Vegas this week, and I mean, the place is always hopping, and they obviously have NHL hockey and football, and I think they'll have an NBA team one day. So maybe that'll, I mean, it should change everything out there with the different revenue stream and what have you. But anyway, I'm getting off the topic. The Mets played a couple of second division clubs, clubs where they should have won 4 out of 6. They played 500 ball. And teams that are low to mid-80s, this is kind of what they do. So now that you really have a feel, as this thing settles out, and they're getting into a real treacherous part of the schedule. They're playing Baltimore. They're on the road at Arizona and San Diego. And really at this point, this is the staring into the abyss, maybe that's a strong word, but this is a real gut check for this club because, quite frankly, with the way they're playing, the inconsistency on offense, and the atrocious starting pitching at times, and the very disappointing bullpen performances, and I'll get into that because there's one overarching theme with the staff, and I think you know what it is. It starts with a W and ends with a K. With that all being a night in and night out theme, I don't know if they could survive another West Coast trip. I don't know if they could survive playing in a road environment against hot teams like Arizona and San Diego, and playing one of the better teams in the league in the Baltimore Orioles, a team that has World Series aspirations. I don't know if they could get to September within a reasonable distance between themselves and Atlanta. And look, Atlanta has their own problems, and they've had tough losses, but they still have something that the Mets don't, which is really top-tier starting pitching and a better bullpen, and a bullpen that, quite honestly, doesn't walk the world. And I don't know if the Mets, even if they hold serve here and play at or slightly above 500 over the next couple of weeks, I don't know if that's good enough to stay within a game or two of the Braves and head into September where the last 2 weeks matter. Because we've said all along it'll be the last 2 weeks of the season that will matter. Now, maybe Arizona comes back to the pack a little bit. We'll see. The Giants have been playing now that Blake Snell has refound himself, playing much better, so they're still nipping at the Mets' heels. We'll see where that goes. But the reality is right now, you just don't think, your gut's telling you, and we'll see. You know, Mendoza's done a good job at this club. Every time you're ready to say they're done, especially after that terrible loss against the A's on the business person special on Thursday, they come out and they play good for a couple of days. And, you know, maybe they go out and they sweep the Orioles. Who knows? Unlikely. I mean, you're not going to put your money down. I wouldn't. But we'll see where this team is at, because you're going to learn a lot. Even though you kind of know what this team is, and it's the go-get-it-done phase, as we talk about here on the Talking Mets podcast, you're going to learn a lot about this club. And at the very least, even if they fade into, hey, they're not going to make the playoffs type of situation, you're going to learn a lot about certain players, so that as they get into the offseason and as they get into 2025, you're going to know who's a solution and who's not. Now, here's the real frustrating part about this club. This club is very similar, in my opinion, and I've said this, to the 2022 team. They, in a sense, where how the recipe is to win. You get into the sixth inning with a halfway decent start, you hand it over to a bullpen, and you hand that bridge, hands that the ball over to the elite closer, who doesn't get used very much anymore. I mean, he's hardly been used. You know, since his suspension, he's hardly been used. That's why it was so frustrating when they didn't bring him in against the Yankees and almost blew a game. You know, Jake Diekman's final gift was striking out Aaron Judge. Again, I'm not going to get into that. The offense isn't great. It has brownouts. It's good. It has these brownouts, but it's able to put up a crooked number and score enough to make the other parts of the team valuable. Now, the big difference with this club versus the 2022 team, and going back, and I just did back of the paper bag math, and I went back, about 10 years. And if I got something wrong, don't kill me here, because, you know, I'm doing a show to entertain here. I'm not doing a thesis project. But going into today's game, the Mets only have one team that has walked more batters than they have this year, and that's the Chicago White Sox, a team that has won 24% of their games, that very well, and I don't think they'll break the 62 Mets record, but very well could be the worst team in the history of the game, taking the 62 Mets and taking their history, bad history, and putting them into the trash and becoming the poster child for mediocrity. That's the only team that's walked more batters than the Mets. And the other teams that are around them, well, you've got the Angels, you've got the Rockies, second division clubs, the Rangers, a disappointing team, the Marlins, who they played. And actually, ironically, the Astros, similar to the Mets, walk too many batters. But the Astros are 10 games over 500. So there's more to it. And I decided, okay, typically, based on my baseball principles, which I hold very true, I think I have a pretty good feel of what it takes to be a good baseball team. It's not overly complicated. You don't need 52 analysts to know that. You know what? You have good up-the-middle defense. You have a pitching staff and good pitching. Typically, part of that good pitching is not to put free base runners on. Because if you pitch to contact and keep runners off base, guess what? You got, you know, guys, eight gloves behind you that normally, if they're good defensively and you locate your pitches, for the most part, a ball is going to find a glove. Most hitters are going to fail 70 to 75% of the time. So when you walk them, you're pretty much giving them a gift, especially in today's game where there's not as much contact. Walks, to my opinion, are even more detrimental than they were 30 years ago. Okay, again, a statement, that I can't back up with a lot of research and data, but it makes a ton of sense. So then I said to myself, hey, maybe I'm being hard on this team. Maybe, you know, in the age of analytics, teams could walk batters and still be successful. But guess what? There hasn't been a lot of teams, and I'm just going back 10 years, that were at the top five in walks that nobody won a championship. I could tell you that. Some made the postseason, not many. And most of those teams are second division or towards the bottom of the league when it's all said and done. So what teams have been in the top five in walks going back to when the Mets last won a pennant in 2015? Well, it's the 21 Cardinals, the 18 Cubs and Braves, and the 17 Cubs. It's amazing the Cubs under Theo Epstein, after they won the championship in 2016, were a pitching staff that walked a lot of batters and, you know, didn't strike out as much as you think, as many batters as you think. Now, it seems in some of those seasons, the principals, the core players were not that bad. And, you know, maybe that plays into it. And I think when you start to look at some of these clubs, you have to go much deeper than the top line, because maybe the bullpens walked a little bit more batters and their strikeout rate of the bullpen. Like, you really have to do a deeper dive in research to give this kind of analysis justice. But here's what I know. Top line, back of the paper bag math, the Mets are walking themselves out of the playoffs, because the recent history says that they cannot walk batters at the rate they are and win and be successful. I mean, they have guys that have pitched out of the bullpen in big situations, and I know he's not here anymore, like Jake Diekman, that have 6.8 walks per nine. Sean Reed Foley, 5.8. Obscene level walks. And if you use my criteria, which I would say three on the button, three per nine innings in walks on the button, is where the demarcation line, in my opinion, is where it starts to get dangerous. I'd love it to be beneath three. I'd love it to be two. You're asking a lot. Three per nine, if you use that as the demarcation line for starters and relievers, the only guys that are active right now on the roster that are at that is Severino, who had the complete game yesterday, and a skush below it, and he's still new to the club, he's only been here about a month, is Phil Maton. All the new imports, Brazenban, almost 5 per 9. Stanek. Stanek is right at 3, but historically he's much higher than that. Reed Garrett, who's been killing them, and I've been saying for a while, I've been tweeting about it, not a bright lights guy. A useful arm, but not a bright lights, high leverage guy. He's almost at 5. He walked 3 batters in his outing, and he would have been in much more trouble if he didn't pick off a runner at second base. And it's so absurd, because you can't even get through 6 outs. They needed 3 pitchers to get through 6 outs when Brazenban came in. Now, he was a little lucky. You know, if that ground ball that got past Brazenban, the second batter, which he had a lot of soft contact, you know, if he's able to make that play, and I don't know if Lindor or Iglesias really were ever going to get the runner out, Hill at first base, maybe that inning's completely different. And we're talking about a different situation here. But you know the case. Reality is reality. So when you start to really be honest with yourself, putting aside any, because here's what you're going to be talking about today. Here's what everybody's going to be talking about today. Oh, Mendoza, Bunting, McNeil, J.D. Martinez, who's got an OPS or slugging under 400 since, I mean, we talked about, is he in his decline? Is his back bothering him since July 1st, since the hot streak? You know, not getting big hits with runners on base. You know, Lindor almost hitting one out, barely missed a game-winning home run, which would have, still, I would have been having the same type of conversation here today. Maybe would have added a twist here or there. Same conversation, because no matter what happened in that ninth inning, whether McNeil was successful in bunting, getting a hit, Lindor's ball going on the fence, the process versus the outcome, the process is bad. The process is bad because this staff walks too many batters. Now, I know people are starting to point the finger at Jeremy Hefner, but guess what? In 2021, they were one of the better teams in terms of walks per nine innings. And last I looked, Hefner was the pitching coach back then. And maybe now, and in 2022, same thing. They were one of the better teams in the league. Now, they had different pitchers. guys like DeGrom and Scherzer and Bassett wasn't bad. And, I mean, Adovino had one of his best command and control years of his career, and Diaz was much better. So maybe there is some outliers there. But in the end, you can't expect, and there has to be a huge introspection as they go into the offseason, because they're going to have to rebuild a little bit this pitching staff. They have a number of guys that are going to be a free agent. And I personally think outside of Diaz, everybody in the bullpen's up for grabs here to remake this bullpen. They have to, I mean, Stearns has been able to, and I give him credit, with especially with rebuilding bullpens on the fly, has been able to stay competitive with this bullpen. It's been any other Mets season, I think this could have been disastrous, this bullpen. They've been able to stay competitive. They've been able to rebuild it on the fly. But he has to start to think to himself, what really constitutes a good arm out of the bullpen? I understand you want guys that miss bats that strike out 12, 13, 14 per nine. But if they're walking five or six, I really believe it negates everything. Because once you start walking those guys, it changes the complexion of the inning completely. You go to the set from the stretch, you know, all that stuff. And guess what? They're different. It's a completely different situation. The more pressure you put on pitchers, the more likely they are to throw a wild pitch like you saw today. And maybe I'll definitely talk about it more later with the whole trial balloon that the league's floating through Jesse Rogers of ESPN with changing the rules of requiring starting pitchers to go six innings. You know, maybe it's time to rethink a lot of this stuff. Just because numbers are in front of us and say A, B, and C, start to watch the game with your eyes. These walks kill. These walks kill. And at some point, and he's a smart guy. I mean, I'm sure he didn't intentionally put a staff together that wants to walk at the extreme end of the league. You have to say, why is this the case? Is it because they're focusing on throwing too many sliders and sweepers and all this other stuff? You know, this is the new thing. Sweepers, the new rage and all that stuff. No, you know, Reed Garrett didn't want to throw any fastballs when he was walking those guys. You know, throw a fastball, try to locate. Don't be afraid. You got guys with 650, 660, 670 OPSs. More than likely, you throw a 95-mile-an-hour fastball and locate it, they probably aren't going to hit it out of the park. Don't be afraid. It seems like the bullpen that's nibble, 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 nibble. It's frustrating. And I can assure you, and I don't think it's going to change, they are not going to be able to navigate Baltimore, San Diego, Arizona. If they're going to walk guys out, if they're going to have to need three relievers to get basically Brazenbone, Reed Garrett, and Maton to get six outs, not only is it going to burn your bullpen, okay, it's telling me you're allowing too many runners on base. When you play good teams, hot teams like San Diego, like Arizona, who has a Corbin Carroll, or they have a Machado, or, you know, whoever, they're going to beat you. Good hitters are going to beat you, just like Lindor almost beat the Marlins today. And the walks negate some of the good defense they have. And now you have even worse news because Nimmo's shoulder's bothering him, and it didn't sound good when Mendoza brought it up. So I expected an IL stint of at least a couple of weeks. Now you have McNeil. We'll get to him and his bat, and you have some depth. Marte's back. Maybe Ben Gamel shouldn't punch his ticket out of town just yet. I don't think they could undo that. But you have to start being more bearish on this Mets team going down the stretch. And it's, you know, hopefully Nimmo's okay and he's not going to be out the rest of the year and it's not as a long term, because shoulders are a problem. They could create all sorts of problems offensively. And it's his throwing shoulder, which adds another dimension to it. But when it's all said and done, you cannot feel good about this team after they played 500 ball against two teams, you know, including one. I mean, what really aggravated me this week is this team spent, and I wrote about this over at Beyond the Mic, this team spent more time complaining about Austin Adams celebrating on the mound with the OMG celebration. To me, that's not why you lost. You lost because you got a bad start. You know, would it kill them to push Blackburn another inning? what was he at, around 85, 90 pitches? But oh no, the third time around the order, this is what it says. Well, guess what? Give me a guy that doesn't walk anybody and pitches to contact versus a 95-mile-an-hour or, you know, sweeper, spinner, whatever the hell RPMs he's got that's going to put two runners on base, have to pick off one, and then winds up giving up a hit because the bright lights are too big for him. And I warned everybody with these deadline deals, Brazenban comes from no man's land in front of nobody, and I think he's got some good stuff. But just like Garrett, the only time he's pitched really well and dominant is when they've been behind. He blew a game against Anaheim. He had no command that day. And now he was, you know, couldn't get a clean inning against Oakland, lost. Couldn't get a clean inning here against Miami, lost. Three really important big losses. Three games that the Mets should have won. Three games they didn't win. Three games that will put them much closer to Arizona, much closer to San Diego, and put them a couple of games up of the Braves and much more comfortably up against the Giants. And much more viable to be a team that could be closer to 90 wins than 83 to 84 to 85. So when this is all said and done, and we do the postmortem on the season, we'll talk about, you know, Mendoza decisions and Pete's down year and Nimmo hasn't really been 100% Nimmo, and maybe we've seen the last best of J.D. Martinez. And maybe they could have used, you know, a better starting pitcher at the deadline. But when it's all said and done, WALK, and it's not a radio station, it's the term walk, bases on balls, is the reason why this team may not make the postseason. And that's a shame, because the only person a pitcher can look in the mirror on that one is themselves. That's not a bad hop. That's not quirky dimensions. That's not weather. That's on you. And that's right now what's holding the Mets back. All right, let's take a quick break. When I come back, who is Jeff McNeil? And maybe we've been a little bit hard on Jeff McNeil. Maybe his season isn't morphing into the next Daniel Murphy. Maybe he hasn't been all that bad. Maybe there's some outliers and quirks. And I dived a little bit into McNeil, and I found a couple of interesting things that nobody's talking about. So, all right, let's take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after this.